When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Want to teach your kids financial literacy but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/pod.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Illini guy Mike Kegley, and I'm here with Matt Charbonneau. He is one of the writers from the Detroit News who covers Michigan State football and basketball, and he may be the tiredest guy in the country with everything going on around that program. Matt, thanks for coming on tonight.
Absolutely, Mike. And you know what? Why would we want it any other way, right? Football, basketball converging. It's that time of year. So.
Yeah, it converged very well, and I will say that I was looking at your Twitter feed, and I saw that it's an exhibition game, and Tom Izzo got a technical.
Yeah, well, Tom Izzo getting a technical isn't exactly
right,
you know, breaking news, but the fact he got one in an exhibition game is kind of funny. And I tell you, for a second there, he was pushing it. Like, I'm like, the man's never been thrown out of a game, which I know a lot of Big Ten fans will find remarkable.
Yeah.
Who am I kidding? Many Michigan State fans will find remarkable. But, man, he was pushing it for a minute. I thought, man, he gets his first ejection in an exhibition game. It would have at least added some spice to an otherwise ho-hum exhibition game. But, yeah, he's I guess it's preseason for him, too. He's got to get fired up early with that schedule they got coming. So.
Yeah, and then the conundrum would be, so he got thrown out of an exhibition game. Does that mean he's ever been thrown out of a game?
And well, right. Yeah.
What a trivia question that would be.
Well, it's funny, too, because his son, Steven, got in the game again. And Steven hasn't made a shot in a game. I don't think he scored in a game. He made a free throw in an exhibition game.
Okay.
He fired up a three, and it got blocked. But I was like, you know, it wouldn't even have counted anyway. It's an exhibition game.
Yeah, good point.
So, he's a fan. Yeah. Fans like that one, but yeah.
Well, you know, I appreciate the coverage there, and just so you guys know, we're recording late in the evening, and Matt's already, you know, had a full day of covering Spartan football. Then he gets to go to Spartan basketball, and then here he is on Eye on the Illini. So somewhere karma's just a bear. And
yeah. Well, like I said, it's that time of year. What the hell? We might as well dive in. Considering next week Michigan State basketball plays on an aircraft carrier on Friday in San Diego, and then is at home in football the next day against Rutgers. And believe it or not, it's my plan to be at both. So.
Wow. Do they still have the red eyes to make that possible?
Well, that's the only way. There is a red eye from San Diego back to Detroit direct. So yeah, I'll make it back in plenty of time. I'll be back in Detroit by like 7 a.m. Come on.
Well, shoot, I'm going to be on that Twitter feed all day seeing just how coherent you are.
I might make no sense by Saturday afternoon, but whatever.
Yeah, that's actually a heck of a 1-2 punch there to cover that. So, of course, the people that are listening to this, we got a lot of Illini fans who are kind enough to choose our podcast to listen to. There's a lot of swirl around the team with the whole tunnel issue, and I think maybe to give this a little bit of context, this is the third time in 12 months that Michigan has had an issue in the tunnel. Obviously it started with a little bit with Ohio State, then we had Penn State, which is apparently Coach Franklin's fault exclusively. And then that's what Jim Harbaugh said, and we have no choice but to believe him. Right. And then the Michigan State issue. So that's the third time. My thought process is it's people with state university in the title. So there could be something there. There could be something with white jerseys. Maybe that's infuriating or makes people angry to wear them. But for 95 years, the better part of 95 years, you know, you might hear about a little bit between the Ohio State and Michigan rivalry, you know, on that Woody and Bo special, but really haven't heard a lot about problems up at the Big House.
Yeah.
What do you think?
You're right. It is kind of odd that it has happened. It's happened recently.
Right.
Now there's some people, and some people around town here have suggested that a lot of this comes from the top, comes from Jim Harbaugh. Those aren't Michigan fans, as you could imagine. Michigan fans are going to give you the opposite. I mean, you know, we're in this polarized world right now.
You
have to pick a side, and certainly in a rivalry like Michigan State, there are two sides. But, you know, some more of the issues have happened recently with Jim Harbaugh there. Now, you know, I'm not saying the guy's sitting there telling his players to go run up the tunnel or, you know, let's cause all these issues. But, to me, it's worth exploring and at least being open to the idea that the culture there has helped lead to some of this. Now, again, none of this is absolving
exactly
what the Michigan State players did. I don't think we're all naive enough to believe those two Michigan players were just minding their own business walking up the tunnel. That said, what we've seen, what I saw personally, what we've seen on other videos is just unacceptable. I mean, one guy's hitting a guy with a helmet. I mean, that's assault, right?
I mean,
I don't know. Again, I don't know what happened right before that.
Right.
But that's never where you end up. And the big group of guys beating up the other guy on the ground, which was happening right in front of me, that stuff is unacceptable. So you can't – it's like you can have two wrongs, right?
I mean,
Michigan's culture can be a little bit bad right now, and you could blame those guys for running up there. You can also blame the Michigan State guys for the way they acted. So all in all, it was a bad scene. And that tunnel at Michigan, I know it's getting a lot of attention, and James Franklin brought it up 2 weeks ago saying something has to change. And of course, Harbaugh said he was being a baby. but he's not wrong. I mean, it is a long, narrow tunnel. It's narrower than most. The locker rooms are right across the hall of tunnel from each other. That said, a lot of places have one tunnel. Michigan State has one tunnel. And I don't, in my time there, I've been covering them 13 years, but being around goes way back. I don't recall there being an issue in a tunnel. I don't remember hearing a lot of other Big Ten schools having these issues in a tunnel. You know, some of them have more than one tunnel, but it's happening at one place. Now, do they change the way it's set up? I don't know. Could you have better security? You definitely could have better security. I mean, I watched security guys and policemen standing and watching those things happen, which was kind of remarkable. So, I mean, I think at the very least, they need to look at how that whole thing's being operated there, especially in a game like that, especially when Ohio State's in town. It's just, there's just so much, you know, animosity and all that stuff right now. It's just having all those players together that close is a recipe for disaster. So it all kind of went into a pot there and became an absolute mess. And there's nobody that's blameless in that one. You can't look at one, you know, one team or the other and say it's your fault. You can't look at one person and say it's your fault. There's a lot of people to blame in that mess. But I do think it highlights there's some issue there. And at the very least, they need to look at how that operation works in that tunnel.
Yeah. And I will tell you as a neutral, impartial observer for once in my life, that definitely was, as I looked at it, I kept thinking to myself, two things can be true. One would be that the Michigan State players crossed the line. It should never go from verbal to physical. And when you're, thank God, you know, no, at least for what we know, no permanent damage was done, because if you swing a helmet at somebody who doesn't have a helmet on, you could potentially kill somebody. And thankfully that didn't happen. So there's no excuse for what behavior it was. And yet at the same time, you know, you got 3 points of behavior issues that they may not be anything of Jim Harbaugh's fault, but somebody should at least look at it to do a root cause analysis. And of course, at the same time, you got Juwan Howard slapping people from Wisconsin. So it makes you wonder if there is some sort of He-Man tough guy club going on at Michigan, and I don't know, maybe Ohio State domination drove him to that. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said too. I mean, Michigan State, for years they didn't want to acknowledge Michigan State as a real rival. And it took 15 years of Michigan State controlling it for them to finally do so. Is that playing a role? I don't know. And that's the other thing too. These here in this area, both sides, they want to hurl everything at each other. And Michigan State people are saying, like, there's a culture at Michigan because look at Juwan Howard and look at these other things. Whereas at Michigan, they'll say, well, look at the culture at Michigan State. You've had, these issues and this player in trouble and off field things. And
Yeah.
then you just get into the thing of,
He
you're
said,
just,
she said, yeah.
yeah. And let's be honest, there's not too many programs out there that don't have their issues at some point. Right. So then you just kind of get back to what was the issue here in this? Why has this rivalry gotten to this point and so toxic? And what do you do to kind of fix that? And I don't know if anyone has a great answer for that right now. And they're not going to not be playing the game. It's not like they're going to realign, when USC and UCLA come in and put them in opposite divisions and say they don't play every year.
Right,
That's
right.
not going to happen. So there needs to be some adults in the room because, quite frankly, Saturday night into Sunday, there was some quote unquote adults not acting very mature, to be honest with you. So hopefully cooler heads will prevail. The downside for Michigan State is they're obviously they had a lot of guys in the wrong, and they're continuing to go through video and suspending guys, so as they should. The other downside is a bunch of their defensive guys on a defense that isn't very good to begin with, and now they're even a little more shorthanded coming into Saturday. But I don't think anyone is worried about that right now. I think they all agree that Mel Tucker's doing the right thing at this point, especially with what we saw there. Those are guys that you can't have come out there, at least on Saturday.
Yeah, no, I agree. You've got to at least take a look at it, and you can't have them out there and then find, have the situation go even lower, based on more in future evidence. Illinois is on the west sidelines at Memorial Stadium, and the adversaries are on the opponents on the east sidelines, and they run across each other to go to the locker room because Illinois goes to the east end of the stadium to their tunnel, and then the other teams go to the west end. But before Brett Bielema got there, Illinois usually lost, so nobody really cared to have, there's no need to get in a fight with a team you just beat really bad. So maybe Illinois is going to have to try to figure out, or be concerned and think about these things proactively. But I will say one thing. It was very interesting. Totally has nothing to do with this situation. But Tommy DeVito got late hit on the sidelines into some of those rolling cabinets or whatever that are on the sidelines. And he got thrown into one relatively hard. And I was surprised, to be real honest, because I was a hothead when I played, sports. I was surprised that the Illinois guys, they yelled and they moved forward, but they didn't put hands on the Nebraska player. And I wonder if that was a reflection of the discipline of Bielema, or if it's just, good old-fashioned luck. Because people don't ever think about luck being part of life, but it is. But whatever, the response was definitely different than what we saw later on in the day. We didn't know that obviously at the time, but or I guess it was the other way around. So I guess, but we hadn't heard about all the things going on at Michigan yet. So it was one of those things where I guess as a fan, you just saw a little bit of a difference. Does it mean something? Probably not, but.
The other thing too is we are dealing with 18 to 22-year olds who,
Yes.
if you've referenced it already, is a hot, like we think back to when we were that age. We probably aren't going to be proud of every single decision we made. So,
Thank God for no smartphones or cameras back in those
well,
days,
right. I
right?
mean, that's the other thing too in this. It was completely by chance that I was in that spot to record that thing. So for two reasons. Number one, I normally wouldn't be there. The only reason I was down there at that moment is because so it's Michigan and Michigan State. We have a Michigan writer as well. She was writing that quick game story that you post right away. So with about 4 minutes left, and at Michigan, it's kind of a pain. You got to go around the stadium and all, so it takes a minute, and you're getting going through people. So I'm like, let me just go early. So it was by chance that I and two other reporters were even there. Okay, so that happens, and then of course, yeah, the phones now. I mean, normally we wouldn't have even had in the past, we wouldn't have had those. And some people have suggested that I shouldn't have done that, and I should have been trying to break it up. But you know, there were plenty of.
Because yeah, but those are the people though who generally have not been right up next to
Yeah, I mean,
an offensive or defensive lineman, even in college. Because I run in, you know, I'm about 6'1", and I gain a little extra pounds now, so I'm about 240, and I look like a pimple.
yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. When I was, the players were crowding into me. My phone held up above my head saw way better than I did. So
Right.
it's like I have some kind of idea as I'm looking what's happening. But I got an even better idea when it was done, and I looked at the film and was like, "Oh my goodness, I didn't even, you couldn't see that well." And some of the other stuff on the other side where the kid was swinging the helmet, I didn't even, there was
Right.
no way I could see it from where I was behind all those big
Trees.
players. So
Yeah.
it's, but yeah, I mean, if I was thinking about that, like if we weren't there and we didn't have our cameras out, how many people would know about it? I mean, I know the ABC camera was out and that footage came out later. So perhaps it would have, but that would have just been a small snippet of it. You would have only seen the one incident with the player swinging the helmet, and that would have been bad enough.
Right.
But there would have been a whole nother thing that no one would have seen. No, there would have been no video of. So someone might have talked about it, but you would have been saying, well, okay, but how bad was that? You know what I mean?
And then
So.
one of your peers got hit or got a lot of crap on the internet for not being able to press a red button, which
So that's
I got to be
yeah.
honest with you, I would be teasing him forever about that.
Oh well, we do, and if you know him, his name's Chris Solari, the Detroit Free Press, and
Yep.
a good friend of mine too. But he's the kind of guy that, of course, that happened to him. So yeah, he thought he hit the button and didn't. It's funny in my video, you can see him holding his phone
Right,
like he's
right.
shooting it, only for the end to be like, "What do you mean I don't have anything?" So it was. It just he's one of everyone seems to have that friend that it's like if these things are going to go wrong, it's going to be happening to this guy, and of course it was him. So there was a little bit of humor in.
And he got tagged, like somebody said, there's an assistant coach who's not doing anything. And I mean,
Yeah.
I was just, I got to be honest with you, when you're not there, it can be much funnier. So I just literally was reading these Twitter threads and I'm like, this poor guy, you
Yeah.
know, just
Some
doing his
people.
job
Yeah,
is.
some people's claim too. Oh, you didn't. You're not showing it because you're trying to
Yes.
protect the players. It's like, trust me, that guy's not trying to protect the players. He's more angry that he doesn't have the video. So,
Yes, I well anyway, so I appreciate your up close and personal view of that because that is not at all the reason why I actually asked you on here because I
oh,
actually I read your stories, so
okay.
that was you know I didn't I you know so I was just more excited about talking about this matchup. So who are the of the eight guys who are going to be suspended? Who's going to make a difference on the field come Saturday afternoon in your mind?
Well, there's going to be two for sure, and one really stands out. He was suspended today, and that's Jacoby Windman, who has started the last two games at linebacker. He's a grad transfer from UNLV and started the year playing defensive end. He was came as a linebacker, but he was rushing the passer well, so they said we need help there. First couple of games, he had 5.5 sacks and 12 tackles for loss, or whatever it was. But the Michigan State defense was struggling, so the last. Wisconsin a couple of weeks ago, they moved him back to linebacker. He had an interception, forced fumble. He's a guy that really understands the game, athletic guy. Obviously against Michigan, they still ran for 270 or whatever it was, but
Right.
they do that to everybody. In fact, they ran for 400 against Penn State. So that defense actually has been playing better the last few games, but a lot of it has been because Jacoby Windman has been back at linebacker. He got suspended today, so he's out. They're already thin at linebacker, so that doesn't help. And the other guy, Angelo Gross, who's started 25 straight games as a safety or nickelback, he's out as well. He was in that first wave of suspensions. Those two guys are going to be big. Those are important players. The crazy thing is all these guys are defensive players. Freshman Zion Young, a defensive end, has started the last two games. Mostly they've had a lot of injuries up front, so they've kind of been forced to play him, but he's been pretty solid for a true freshman. So those three are guys that are really kind of key parts of that defense right now. The other guys are a lot of special teamers, depth sort of guys, another true freshman in there. But those three names are the ones that I think are really going to affect this defense. The defensive end, because they've already got, like I said, the injuries. They're thin at that spot as it is. Linebacker, they're thin. Ben Van Summeren's a guy who started a lot, and he missed the Michigan game, so we'll see if he comes back. They've already lost Darius Snow in the first game of the season. So they're thin in those places. It's places they couldn't really afford to lose guys, and they're losing them now for a defense that it really has struggled. But the last 2 weeks started to kind of come together, and some of it was you got a safety like Xavier Henderson back. Mm-hmm. You got hurt the first half of the first game. He came back for Wisconsin. Jacob Slade, defensive tackle, came back for the Wisconsin game. Michigan State's got very good tackles, but Jacob Slade's an all Big Ten type guy. Getting those guys back has helped them a lot the last couple of weeks. But now losing those other three guys, not a lot of depth on that defense. And when you consider the rushing attack that they're going to face in Illinois, it doesn't feel like a very good combination. It's a bad time for those suspensions, but they're absolutely going to hurt this defense, which was already kind of thin as it is.
Yeah, and Illinois has gotten what I thought was interesting in the start of the year, the interior line play from guard center guard was disappointing. Mm-hmm. And as the year has gone on, they have really improved dramatically. Chase Brown has just done what he does, to be real frank.
Yeah.
They're getting movement up the middle. It'll be really interesting to see how they choose to attack Michigan State this week. If you watched the game last week, if you have the opportunity, I'll tell you what Illinois reminds me of. And you got to think of it as Bill Parcells taught Bill Belichick, and Brett Bielema worked for Bill Belichick in that interim time between Arkansas and Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And watching the game against Nebraska, Illinois won 26-9. They didn't do much in the second half offensively, other than like a vampire just kind of drained the blood out of Nebraska. They only scored 6 points, a couple field goals. But it was like watching an old Parcells team. Tommy DeVito only had 2 incompletions, threw for 179 yards. Chase Brown gets 149. They just sucked up the clock, and before you know it, the game's over. And the defense just made big play after big play when they needed it. And I was like, this is like watching, and I grew up Central Illinois guy, born in 67. So when I remember watching football, Butkus had retired, and there was no Peyton, and I lived in Central Illinois. My parents were always like, Chicago's where your tax dollars go to die. So you'd watch the Bears get killed. I'm a Cowboy fan.
Yeah.
And I hate those Giants, but now I'm starting to appreciate them because Brett Bielema's got this team looking like those Giant teams that, let's face it, think about the Parcell, think about, I'm sorry, now I'm blanking, but when they won in 2007.
Oh, no, I'm blanking on the guy's name too. I can see
Coughlin.
Yes, I can see his face.
So there right now, Brett Bielema is doing his Tom Coughlin expression, because nobody was afraid of Eli Manning in that offense.
Yeah.
The defense was excellent, and they somehow beat the unbeatable Patriots, and I'm not saying that Illinois is going to do that. But they play that style of ball.
It was interesting because last week against Michigan, that's essentially what Michigan did for the whole second half. They've had red zone issues all year, but Michigan State has actually been okay in the red zone. They forced 5 field goals, just kind of saying, hey, offense, anytime you're ready to make the game, and Michigan State offensively couldn't. But that's kind of what happened. The interesting thing it'll be, because as I mentioned, Michigan State's strength on defense is that interior, are those tackles. They're very good, in fact. The problem here has been the linebackers especially now with Winman out, they haven't played very well. So they've been, I guess what I would say, okay against the run. They've been a usually Michigan State's a really good run defense team. They're kind of middle of the pack in the country now. And I think a lot of it is they don't have the depth at linebacker. So, you know, can those interior defensive linemen make life at least a little bit difficult for Illinois? Probably. But I just haven't seen it beyond that from the linebackers that's going to be able to really shut down a rushing attack. They can limit you at times, but to completely shut it down for a whole game, I haven't seen it yet this year. They've had five running backs in a row run for 100 yards or more. Even against Wisconsin, when they played well overall, Braylon Allen still yep. running for 150 or whatever it was. So I have yet to see it 8 games in, a consistent 60 minutes of limiting a rushing attack. So when you come up against one like this, it makes you think, I'm not so sure it's going to happen this time, especially what the guys are going to be missing.
Yeah. Well, that is interesting because, you know, as we look at it, you know, you kind of wonder, like, where are you going to attack that defensive line at? You know, you're going to go off tackle. Illinois has some pretty good blocking tight ends that gives you a little bit of that ability to bring them down. So it will be interesting to see how they attack it. And one of the things that has been to Illinois' benefit that we haven't seen for quite a few years is that, particularly as the season's gone on, Tommy DeVito has been very accurate. Now, I probably just jinxed him by bringing it up.
Well, we can blame him on Saturday afternoon when if things go wrong.
Yeah, yeah. But he has been very accurate and basically, you know, gives receivers the ball in a place that they can catch it. Other than the fact that Illinois's got a bubble screen that literally makes Illinois fans hold their breath the minute they see it.
Doesn't every team have a play like that that they always run that the fans all hate? For years, Michigan State's was a jet sweep that it worked like way back in the early D'Antonio days when they were yep. really good. And then it never did for like the next 6 years. And it used to drive the fans crazy.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, our bubble screen has never worked, but it does scare the living. I mean, Chase Brown almost got killed on one, and so against Indiana. And to be honest with you, that play in the that play, and then the call in the end zone where the touchdown didn't count probably cost Illinois the game.
Yeah,
although there are three penalties, or excuse me, there are three turnovers and eight penalties didn't help them at all. So it's hard to blame the referees, and to Bielma's credit, he doesn't.
Yeah,
you know, he just looks at what.
Yeah, it seems like every time you want to look at penalties and all that, you can, as you just pointed out, you can look at three more things that your team did. That if you eliminated those, you wouldn't have to worry about it.
So. Yeah, no, that's exactly. And I, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you've got Coach Izzo there in Michigan State. We got Coach Underwood, and Bielma is just like it. I just can't see myself as a player trying to explain to them excuses why something didn't work. Cause I just don't see it going anywhere.
Yeah. The thing I love too, is like, to me, Brad Underwood and Tom Izzo are like the same guy. I mean, they are so much alike, and you see them when they interact. It's like these two guys, they could just be hanging out doing whatever and shooting yeah. you know what. But it's, yeah, you're right. There's not a lot of excuses are those guys going to listen to.
So. Well, and it's really interesting, too, because, last summer when Illinois was building the staff, they had brought on Chester Frazier and stuff, but it was really interesting to watch at AAU games when Underwood walked in. I mean, people wanted to get his eye.
Yeah.
And like, it was like a coaching, like, hey, how you doing? You know, high fives and everything. And I got an idea for just how much respect he gets from the industry.
Yeah.
As a coach. And to me, that means a lot more than, I mean, like people like you and I, in, you know, respected him because what do we know? You know, I coached AAU basketball. I'm not a college coach, yeah. But when I see other college coaches looking at him that way, and Izzo's had that respect for decades, but it was interesting to watch that where you could see that. And even like this year, Illinois ends up ranked 23 this year in the preseason poll with only five players returning. Two of those players don't really play. And a third one, Luke Goody, broke his foot, so he's out. So they basically got two returning players, and they get ranked 23rd. Now, I'm not saying I think they're a very good team, but that's respect for Coach Underwood.
Yeah, that gets that vote. I remember, I think it was his first year at Illinois. And you know what, Michigan State, the last game at senior night, they have this tradition of kissing the logo at the middle of the court. And it, you know, it drags, depending on how many seniors, it can take a little time. And it's, if you're on the other end of like a 20-point loss, you're kind of like, let's go. In fact, Chris Holtman has openly complained about it in the past. But it was Underwood's first year. And I remember him, there was a Michigan State at a point guard, Tum-Tum Nairn, who was doing his thing. And Underwood made a point of getting out towards center court so he could congratulate him as well. And I remember Izzo looking at Underwood and being like, you know, saying, hey, thanks for putting up with all this crap we're doing, you know? So it's, yeah, I mean, the respect those guys have for Brad Underwood is pretty high. And I think you're right, because he's got his work cut out for him. A lot of new guys, that's not easy. You got a lot of talent there, making it all mesh and work.
Yeah.
Easier said than done. And he's the kind of guy you'd want doing it. Guys like him or Izzo or Matt Painter, guys like that who really good
coaches. You just rattled off the top three coaches, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you. So those are guys you kind of have a little faith in that they can figure that out. And you give them good players, they'll make it work one way or the other.
Well, and I was talking to Underwood this morning, and one of the things he said that I thought was really interesting, talking about the transfer portal and how you end up can have seasons where you have, you know, eight new players you have to integrate. And he goes, you know, I did some JUCO ball. I'm good. He goes, because there's some years we had 10 new players.
Yeah, they were all new, right?
Exactly. And I was like, huh, I never even thought about that. Yeah, I'm sure that since there was no such thing as really like the transfer portal in this form when Josh Whitman hired Brad Underwood. But if I'm Josh Whitman, I'm going to take credit for that too. Well, you know, I thought that JUCO background.
Right.
Might as well get a little bit of extra frosting on there.
Sure. Yeah.
So let's get back to football. So Illinois comes in with top ranked defense in the country from a scoring standpoint. I think they may be the only one or one of two that are under 10 points a game that they're yielding. And I will tell you, I need to do the work, but if you would take first quarter yards out, it would probably be even more impressive, because what Ryan Walters does that I think totally separates him from other people, he's like in his brain, it must be like a Terminator, because he is watching the game and his adjustments as the game strings on, particularly at halftime when he can get with the coaches and kind of like coordinate and stuff. But even in the second quarter compared to the first quarter, it is amazing how that team generally, you're going to get what you get in the first quarter. And then you get like that one game, Indiana got that last drive, but they are amazing in the second half. Defensive line has Newton and Randolph. Newton's speed at 300 pounds is impressive, his quickness. You have Randolph, who's just an athlete. You know, he can still dunk a basketball and make it look good. And then you have the defensive backfield with Quan Martin, Devin Witherspoon, Sidney Brown. You know, you've got several guys there who are NFL prospects. And then you add freshman Gabe Yakus, who is literally 6'4", 255 pounds. To me, he looks like Whitney Mercilus as a senior, if you want to envision somebody. And he goes out there and he's a two-time state wrestling champion in high school. And as a freshman, you would think he's a senior.
Yeah.
How do you envision Michigan State lining up against that? And then the second question is, Ryan Walters was quoted as saying that the Michigan State wide receivers were the best group of wide receivers they've seen this year. Is there something for the Illinois fan to be a little concerned about there?
Well, maybe, but if you're talking about how Illinois makes, you know, the adjustments they make as the game goes, there might not be a better matchup for them if you look at Michigan State's offense and how they have played well in the first half of games and completely disappeared in the second. We just saw it last week. They ran six plays in the third quarter, three and out twice. And now it helps that it goes into it is that their defense can't get off the field either, obviously.
Right.
You only had two possessions in the second quarter or third quarter, but that's not the first time it's happened this year. They've in Minnesota, I think they did the same thing, had six total yards in the third quarter. And the thing about the Michigan game is for the first half, they were moving the ball. You know, they if not for a ridiculous play call at the 5-yard line, there's a pretty good chance they're ahead at halftime, which really would have had the Michigan fans freaking out. But it just shows you they have the ability to move the ball, and one of the reasons are those receivers. And then the second half, it's almost like they make no adjustments. The defense does, and they can't get anything going. And we've just seen that routinely through the year, really beyond – I mean, the first two games don't really count when you're playing Akron and Western Michigan. At Washington, they played well for longer stretches. But once they hit Big Ten play, that's what we've seen routinely is they've played okay in the first half and not in the second. And, you know, there's always a chance with their receivers. Keon Coleman is a sophomore who had a big game last week, is a really talented athletic kid who the basketball team, I'm quite sure, is probably fine if MSU doesn't make a bowl game because he's going to go back. I don't know if you remember last year, he did play on the basketball team.
Yeah.
Just kind of a, you know, just a bench guy. But with their thin numbers up front this year, he probably will play. But he's just a really athletic guy. He's a matchup problem one-on-one. And when you combine him with Jaden Reed, a guy who's been getting it done for a couple of years now, they got a couple other solid possession type receivers. So yeah, they've got weapons there. Even their tight ends are weapons. When you talk about Daniel Barker, who you should probably be aware of.
Should have stayed at Illinois. Daniel should have stayed at Illinois Barker.
In retrospect, yeah. I mean, obviously, how do you know?
Exactly. Yeah, you don't know that at all.
But I mean, the guy's he's a matchup problem for a lot of teams. So is Malik Carr, guys. But you just haven't seen Michigan State be able to consistently come up with ways to utilize those guys. And it can be really frustrating. And part of it is they're not running the ball well. They're not very good up front. I mean, they lost some veteran guys, but they still have guys who've been around. They're just not playing well. That offensive line had not played well all year. So the running game has been completely hit and miss, mostly miss. So you don't have that idea of balance really hasn't been there. So right. I'm sitting here giving you a hard time, giving them a hard time saying they haven't played well in the second half, but they're basically a one-dimensional team at this point. And no matter how good your receivers are, you know, you're easier to defend like that because most teams don't have to worry about, you know, having any bit more guys in the box to defend the run. They just don't have to. So that's been a big problem. You have playmakers in that receiving core. Peyton Thorne is a solid quarterback, but he's gotten to the point now where he's taken such a beating. You can see his feet are starting to move more.
Yeah.
He doesn't have that confidence in the pocket that he did say last year or even early this year. And so that's affecting it as well too. So yeah, there's some matchup issues that I'm sure will challenge Illinois. And Michigan State will probably make some plays. But again, when you're one-dimensional like that, you become a lot easier to defend, especially for good defenses. So, you know, it's another tall task for Michigan State. Now, none of the suspended guys are on offense, but they're just – the way that offensive line has played, it's just been – the balance isn't there. So, you're not seeing any consistent production from them.
Now, is the offensive line – are they like Iowa's line that's just young that maybe next year you'll be we had to suffer through it, but now we've got a little bit of
no. And that's the thing, you'd probably feel better as a Michigan State fan if that's what it was.
Okay,
right? But you're playing guys that are, I mean, you're going fifth year senior, senior, sixth year senior, junior along that offensive line. That is terrifying if you think. First of all, they always say Mel Tucker and Chris Kapilovich, the offensive line coach, say we're going to play the best guys.
Right.
What does that tell you about the guys behind them? If these are your best guys who have not played well all year, who take bad penalties, if those are your best guys, what does that say about some of the redshirt freshmen that you would hope have started to maybe crack that rotation now, or even a couple of the true freshmen that they really like? It's just, we know it's tough for a true freshman to play in the interior.
Oh, yes.
So who knows, maybe those guys are there down the road, but it doesn't give you a lot of confidence. If they were that a bunch of redshirt freshmen and sophomores playing, you'd kind of feel like, okay, they're going to take their lumps and they'll be better for it. That's just not the case right now. So I don't know. Do they lose this game? You know, now they got to win the last three games to be bowl eligible. And I'm sorry, that's probably not going to happen. Do you at some point say, okay, we're less than four games to go, let's play young guys, so you don't got to worry about red shirts? Some coaches might do that. The sense I get from Mel Tucker and his staff is that they won't.
Okay.
So I don't know. That's where you can question some coaching. You know, at what point do you kind of cut bait on a season and say, we need to worry about the future? Because right now they're not,
Yeah.
especially at least along the offensive line. So if they were better, you could live with it, but they
Yeah.
just haven't been very good. And it's the biggest problem with this team, by far the biggest problem. And
You
it's boring, you know, like everyone wants to talk about the quarterback and the receivers and all that. But we know if you can't, if you get beat up front routinely, none of their stuff matters. And they get beat routinely along the offensive line.
Yeah. What about the kicking game from a kicking and punting standpoint?
Well, the punter, here's the thing, when you're their punter might be their best player. So
Okay.
that's, you can either look at that's good or bad. But Bryce Behringer is an All-American punter. He's probably going to be an NFL punter. The problem is he's punting way too much.
Yeah. Illinois has had that, by the way, in the past, you know, so.
But he's really good. He's got a huge leg and he downs a lot of them. And you would think the field position would help, but too many times the defense then gives up a 90-yard drive. But the bigger issue is the kicking game. You know how many field goals Michigan State has made this year?
How many?
One.
Wow.
One
Okay.
field goal. Now, look, they had a run for a while of kickers that were there for 4 years and were good, solid kickers. That run's going back 10 years or more. They're in a position now. They had a true freshman, a highly recruited guy, but he's a true freshman. Jack Stone, they had a transfer from Auburn come in. They haven't been able to settle on one guy. They're having consistency trouble there. They've tried them both. They've been missing extra points. Their long snapper, of all things, got injured 3 weeks ago. So the backup is, you know, some walk-on kid who's, you know, in
Right.
over his head, and he's had issues on field goal snaps. He snapped two over Behringer's head in punting last week, which led to a Michigan touchdown. In other words, let's just put it this way: the special teams for Michigan State are just a disaster right now. So even if they get in a close game, and you're like, we need a kick to win, I'm not even sure who they'd trot out there. I was saying that the offensive line and it is the biggest problem, but this kicking thing, it's almost good that they're not in close games, because then you'd really see it. It's a mess. So.
Yeah, and then I'm just looking at the fact that only four field goals have been attempted this year. I mean, I don't know what the low is for a team, but wow, that's got to be.
Some of them don't even count. Like they had one with a bad snap that I get
Yeah.
technically isn't an attempt.
Right.
They had to throw the ball. I mean, it's been rough. It's
So what are the odds of a lot of times in basketball, that first game that you play without your star player because, he's injured, whatever, the team kind of comes together and they give that effort. Now, the next game, of course, then people can game plan and, you don't have 20 points and 10 rebounds and things don't go so well. So what's the odds of this, the team pulls together and gives this Herculean effort that, throws a curveball at the Illini and bettors in Las Vegas.
I don't it, here's the one thing. I don't doubt for a second that they'll come and play hard. I mean, that's the one thing I have seen from them. You haven't seen the slump shoulders and the woe is us, which is some credit to them and the coaching staff, but the chances of it, you know, leading to some sort of upset are not very good at all. I mean, that's just the reality. Now, you know, there is some chance, sure, because like I said, you see moments in every game where you're like, where is this consistently? And you
Right.
talk to the players, like Peyton Thorne today was saying, the frustrating thing is it'll be a mental error. And you look at the video and say, what the hell were we thinking? You know, and it's frustrating for fans too, because you're like, you guys have been saying your first year. Like,
Right, right.
why are the mental mistakes there? And it's so there are stretches where you're like, this team can compete with anybody. I mean, like I said, the Michigan game was a one-score game into the third quarter. The Ohio State game wasn't as close as maybe, but it wasn't as bad as the year before.
Right.
They should have won the Maryland game. They could have easily come back and beat Washington if they make a couple plays. So there's playmakers there to do it, but we just haven't seen the consistent. We haven't seen a 60-minute game from this team. So that makes you know, to pull off an upset makes it even harder, you know, and penalties have been an issue again, too. They've hurt themselves so many times. It all adds up to say, man, it would take one of Michigan State's best games, but I have no confidence that we'll see that this year.
So what if you had to pick an outcome, do you have an idea? I'm detecting that you might be predicting Illinois. Do you got a score that you might neighborhood that you might go with?
I mean, I definitely think Illinois. I could see it being similar to Illinois-Nebraska last week, right? Being one of those games that just kind of slowly, you know, it's never really out of hand, but you never really, if you're Illinois, you never feel like you're really in trouble. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yep.
At no point are you breathing real easy, but you're like, eh, we still got it in control. It feels like something like that to me. Maybe like a, you know, like a 14, 17 point game, something like that. You know, in terms of a score, I don't, you know, Michigan State has, they'd be lucky to get to 14 points this season. So, you know, could it be something like 30 to 14, something like that? That's kind of what I have in my mind, you know, but I just, it feels like that to me, like one of those where Illinois will just, as you said, just kind of slowly just keep grinding them into the ground before you know it, the clocks run out and you're like, oh, there you have it. Another you know, home win.
And there's, I don't think there's anything that Brett Bielema likes much better than that, because I think that's the funny thing about that man is he has a focus on, you know, we're going to win. I don't really care about the style points. And it really is very similar to, I mean, he doesn't have the acerbic, at least he doesn't let it show through. He doesn't have the acerbic Bill Parcells responses, but you know, he knows what he wants to accomplish. And I just don't think it matters. You know, as long as he's accomplishing his goals, I don't think he cares. And I can't fault a man for that.
No. And it's funny because I think back to his Wisconsin days and for whatever reason, he relished beating Michigan State, maybe a little more than some others. I think the 2011 when Michigan State beat him on the last second Hail Mary that bounced off three guys and, you know, a few weeks later they play in the Big Ten championship and he kind of gets his revenge thanks to Russell Wilson. So,
yeah.
You know, they've had their back and forth in those days when he was at Wisconsin, but yeah, I appreciate a coach like that too. Just win the game. I don't care how you do it. At this point, Michigan State will take out. They wouldn't care how a win comes.
Well, and it's very interesting to watch. Like for instance, I don't know. Harbaugh wouldn't know me. I don't know him, but Brett Bielema, you know, most of my background was working for big pharma companies and stuff. And so when I interviewed Coach B, he was a lot like dealing with an executive at a big company.
Yeah.
Very goal oriented, very milestone oriented and time urgency.
Yeah.
And very much on, you know, how effective are we? How efficient are we? And so it was more like dealing with a CEO or a executive VP than it was a football coach.
I feel like the best coaches are like that usually, right? I mean, of course, they're all going to know the game.
Exactly.
They're not going to.
Well, no. We say that, but then we had Tim Beckman.
Well, I'm saying successful.
Oh, okay. Successful. Right? Okay, good. Fair enough. You got me.
They're obviously they know the game, but most of them are, especially a football coach, right? When you have a staff that big, you have that many players. You have to be able to kind of run it that way.
Yeah.
And then if you can't, you know, we've seen the guys who can't. There may be guys that are great position coaches or great coordinators and they could never really get it done as a head coach. So yeah, I think the best coaches have always been like that. So
yeah.
And he's showing again. I mean, he's done it. He did it at Wisconsin, obviously. He's doing it now. Not as much luck at Arkansas, but you know, is what it is. I think he's proven his track record is being proven again right now.
Oh, I was when he first got hired, I was like, I'll be honest with you, my age played against me because I had visions of Gary Moeller when he came down from Michigan and he was going to run the Michigan everything at Illinois. Well, running a 5-2 defense against Michigan and Ohio State with one-star players did not do much at all. And then, of course, then Bo Schembechler hated Illinois because they had the gall to fire somebody for being a horrific coach at Illinois.
How dare they?
I know. And trust me, he went up to Michigan and he did Michigan at Michigan, and magically it worked.
Amazing when you got the players, right?
Yes, it is. Well, I mean, look, and that's where I get such a – look, Ryan Day may be the best coach in America. I don't know that we'll ever know because, you know, with Urban Meyer, as crazy as that man is, he won at Bowling Green. He won at Utah. He won at Florida. He won at Ohio State. You can say that man can coach.
Right.
Ryan Day, I don't know. Maybe you and I would be a good coach if we were coaching Ohio State. I'm not saying we would, but maybe we would.
Yeah, I think we'd have a better shot than if you told us to go to Northwestern or, you know, something like that.
Exactly. So anyway, I really appreciate you taking time at the end of a very long day. We appreciate that. The Illini fans, I'm predicting, to be honest, I'm predicting, you know, something along the lines of I think I'm actually going to go with the same score as Nebraska. I'm going to predict 26-9.
See, the only thing with that is you'd have to count a Michigan State to kick some field goals.
Oh, you know what? That's a good – well, you know what? I'm going to have to – you're right. I'm going to have to adjust that.
Yeah, or any field goals.
I'm going to go 26-6. And just assume that they score a touchdown and then miss the extra point.
That's a
and
solid
then,
bet, yeah.
Yeah, 26-6 because you know, the other thing that Brett Bielema is really interesting, he doesn't seem to be, at least yet, there's nobody he's mad enough at to try to run the score up on. He just seems to be, you know, let's get business done. We have to win a game, and then we have the next game.
Yeah, and Mel Tucker was asked. He said he knows Bielema not real well. Just knows him from, so I don't think they've got really much of a history, honestly. So, unlike Carball last week, who was running reverse wide receiver passes in the final minute, anyway.
When they say karma's a you know what, it only is if you were a new, if it's only counts that way if you were a you know what.
I remember in D'Antonio's era in 15, the playoff year, they closed with Penn State most years, and they're running it up. They're running a fake field goal in the first half. They had an offensive lineman score a touchdown. You really embarrassed Penn State. Well, the next year, everything flipped.
Yeah.
You better believe at that game at Penn State to close the year, James Franklin wasn't taking his foot off the gas. And I remember Mark D'Antonio was asked at the end of the game, and he basically said, well, you know, we kind of had it coming.
And I just don't – the only thing I don't like about that as a former coach is the we part of it, because – you're the one who's in control of the ship. Right. I had a time that with an AAU team, I had a bunch of young sixth graders, and it was their first year playing together. And we got beat by a team 76-5.
Oh.
And this particular tournament didn't have any rules about pressing. And so this guy pressed us until the very end of the game. He had three guys who were bigger than my center, who could ball handle better than my point guard. All right.
Oh no.
And so at the end of the game, I had parents who wanted to, you know, just squash this guy. And he shook my hand and he asked me, he goes, well, your parents are all mad. And I said, well, you know, what you did was something that we wouldn't do to you.
Right.
And he said, well, he goes, you're anywhere near that. And I was shaking his hand and I said, take a look at my parents over there. And then look at your parents. I said, my parents are taller than your parents by about, the dads are taller by about 8 inches a guy. I go, we'll play next year and we'll see what happens. Sure enough, I had like, their centers were now about the size of my guards.
Uh-oh.
But you know what? We beat them by 15 or 18 because I didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't believe in that, you know. And he came to me and my parents were mad again because they wanted me to run the score up. You know what I mean? And I'm like, we just, you know, there's no point in doing that. Yeah. But, no, you know,
I don't think there's no history that I know of between these guys. So,
yeah, I think this will be one. Like I said, Illinois, the biggest concern I have is Michigan State does have some talent and you don't want to let them get their confidence.
There's, look, they have talent to be better than they are. That's the bottom line. And you could question some coaching decisions in there and all that. They should be better, but they just haven't shown it to this point. So, you know, yep. Maybe be a little cautious, but I don't think I'd worry too much.
Perfect. Well, hey, you know, Matt Charbonneau, you can find him at the Detroit News. And if you go to DetroitNews.com, go into the sports section, Michigan State, he covers all things Michigan State, which obviously, you know, he's going to be going into a busy time with Coach Izzo and another good Michigan State team. Illinois fans try to put shovel dirt in his grave every year, and it never happens. So I'm sure that he's going to be loaded for bear this season. And I think it'll be another great basketball season. So thank you so much. And of course, you can find him on Twitter at Matt Charbonneau. So that's MATT and then CHARBONNEAU. So he's a good follow, very informative. Doesn't manages to just give you the facts and doesn't seem to get too many people fired up. Is a good follow.
Sometimes.
Most of the time. But he's a good follow, so make sure you take a look for his stuff. If you really enjoyed this podcast, you'll probably enjoy the articles that he writes. Thank you very much, sir.
You got it, Mike. Thanks, man. We'll
All right, you. Take care.
All right.
So thanks for listening to this episode of Eye on the Illini. This is powered by IlliniGuys.com, so please go to IlliniGuys.com. You can subscribe. And you can be a full member. We don't charge you till the seventh day, so kick the tires, see if you like it. But if you are there, folks, please, 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 on our front page, you want to make sure that you go and you look at our front page and you look at the forum button. Click that. It takes you back into our forum, our message board. And if you're a paying member, you can see the comments of other members. You can get into debates, leave messages. And then the other thing is our guys like Brad Sturdy, Kedrick Prince, Matt Stevens, myself, Larry. You can interact with us. You can interact with other people on the Illini guys and other subscribers. It's a lot of fun. Please do that. I guarantee you that's where all the sausage is made. You know, if there's a rumor, we can't source something down, somebody doesn't want to go public, we can put it in there. We can't write an article about it, but that's where you kind of hear the rumors about recruiting and this and that and the other thing. It's a lot of fun. We also have our podcasts, Eye on the Illini, you're listening to right now, Sturdy for 30, which is Brad's award-winning podcast that really does a ton of stuff, particularly with basketball. But he's not limited to that because he knows everybody because he's been covering Illinois sports since the early caveman days. And then you have Ked's Recruiting Roundup where he talks to the recruits, gives you the idea of what they're feeling, what their parents are feeling, and what their coaches are feeling as they are being recruited by University of Illinois and other Big Ten schools. Very unique, worth listening to. We also have our radio program, the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular on 20 stations, 30 signals across Illinois. You definitely want to take a listen to that. It's well worth it. Totally great show. Go to IlliniGuys.com, hit the radio button instead of the forum. Hit the radio button and you'll get a list of all the cities that we're in, what day, either Friday or Saturday, and what time our two-hour show is on. So please, you go there, find it around you. Go ahead and tune it in. All we ask is that you call up the station and thank them for having us on the air. And of course, we also have our Big Ten show that goes across the country, Big Sports Radio. Go to bigsportsradio.com. We have stations, again, across all of the Big Ten that have that show on, and you can listen to Big Ten news from us. And we all grew up huge Big Ten fans. So, the only thing we want more than an Illinois victory is a Big Ten victory when it comes to national titles. With that, this is Mike Kegley thanking everybody for listening and thanking Matt Charbonneau for being able to come on. He was a fantastic guest on this preview for the Michigan State Spartans. And we're going to have another preview as well that you'll listen to tomorrow. So we're trying to get you as much information. And we know that over at Michigan State, that is evolving. So we will have the folks from Locked On Spartans on tomorrow. Thank you very much and have a fantastic day.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.